This is the Mudafest Destiny podcast, number 16. Mudafest Destiny is a novel by me, Peter Gelman, subtitled The Rough and Ready Balloon Invasion of the Lunar Peninsula of Texas. Mudafest Destiny is a novel, so I suggest you start with chapter 1. Here I will read chapter 15. I go get it. A dozen of Lunarista's horse guards dismounted and stared down the riverbank at our lost General Washington baseball. One of them, brilliantly blue-clad, plumed and armored hussars, kicked at a boy in rags who tumbled down the slope. He crept forward slowly, poked the black sphere with a stick, and jumped back. But nothing blew up, except the derisive mirth of the relieved hussars. As I understood this game, this baseball, when the ball flew humdingering over the left-handed go-get-its head, it was his solemn duty to go fetch. Therefore had I a problem. I stood there high on the dirty rampart of Fort Texas, wondering, as my fellow crawdads hollered and bellered for me to go get it. The metal man was locomoting the bases, heading for Homestead, where Sarah was waiting with a double V-spot in the Bank of Texas script. Just then my brother came along the ramparts, humming. He was hopping along, pacing out hypothetical telegraph wires from the big acid boxes of the bomb-proof to the bastion. I knew what that meant, drilling. Now that we'd just finished building this cat box, we'd drill in it. We'd be drilling to be ready should occasion arise to throw our first and last bolts from our electric firelocks to daunt a lunar charge. My stomach gave a little jerk. That mean after Brown's little flagpole chat, the officers concluded that our cannons couldn't keep them pesky lunars from trespassing over our walls. Kelly was chipper as a New Orleans gentleman strolling from his wife's dinner to his tart's bower. Not at all disturbed was he by all the super ceremonious praying and devoted singing. The entire army of the Sea of Tranquility, once a dozen hussars scouting our humdingered baseball over the river, it made the rest of us nervous, seeing as they were doing it like they were more eager to meet their maker, unlike myself, a semi-unrepentant sinner. I was about to ask my brother's permission to go after the ball, since it was an all-important army concern, that being spirit. Without it, we Calhounian crawdads would have to prematurely accept that the Henry Clay Chickenhawk homesteaders outnumbered our own 1-0, a clear popular sovereignty victory for the Free Staters of Company A. But just then, nearby, the nervous sentries nudged each other, and one of them called, "Sir, Lieutenant?" Kelly turned his head. "I didn't see your salute," he said. The sentry's face got red, and he just saluted, and saluted vigorously, saying nothing, knowing Kelly's reputation for anger. As he saluted, his Volta's pile on his back sloshed. The other sentry said, "We're concerned, sir." And as he saluted, he knocked his tall cylindrical hat, that fashionable military item called a shako. He knocked his shako all crook-eyed crooked. It was on that basis, as I immediately recognized, that my rather dandy brother would frown on the sentry's concern. "That begging your pardon, sir," being a foreign-born potato lover, he rolled his R's like a purring tomcat, "that some of us fear the good Lord may just a wee bit favor the trajectory of their blessed round shot over ourn. Out of common courtesy for their devotions, sir," the other chimed in, reddening. Quick and Shako nodded, smiling helpfully. He added, "We was wondering, sir, if and we might not..." Before he could finish, Kelly spat, "Yes, you might not, pagan," and went back to his hopping and humming. He nodded to me. "Shoot, look at you," I called, annoyed at his bullying ways, which I so often had suffered, all prettied up and polished like you were on your way to see Hugo's Hernani. "So," said he, suddenly wide nostril like a running stallion, "is this the proper comportment due toward your superior?" "Superior," I laughed. just because you were fool enough to trade 6 good horses for 11 cents of gold braid. I call that a superior kind of stupidity. Hey now, look, King George, I mean Napoleon, just cool down there, Caesar. I gotta go get our baseball. I was stepping backward as he advanced, his fists doubled, and eyes afire. But he was so mad that he started to cough, giving me a moment to escape. Be right back. So long. I ran down the slope before he could calm down his anger enough to catch his breath and clobber me. Frankly, I'd rather eat dirt than crow. He could hit me as much as he liked, seeing as he was an officer, but I'd never call my big brother superior. Hey, Lunars, I called as I ran, waving my arms. I leapt far as I could across the ditch, missed a dead cactus, bounced off a big mesquite log, and was out again. I ran to the river. Over the cold sea, yonder 20 yards, the soldiers looked up at me and pointed their carbines. A gorgeously uniformed officer with a shiny brass chest plate and Roman brush-top helmet now spurred his horse out of the shadow of Plato's crater, down a slope to his dismounted men. They formed a line behind my baseball. One of them saluted and gestured how the ball flew out of our fort, over the short span of sea, and landed on their side, pow, right at his feet. Evidently there was a misunderstanding. "Hello there," I shouted. "Buenos lunas, and howdy-do to you too there, buddies. Say, smart-looking uniforms. Do they tear as easy as ours? Now, regarding that thing there, say, it ain't lit. No, sir, it's just our General Washington. I should say our baseball." I explained to the row of carbines and hostile faces. I appealed to the officer, a handsome gray-haired fellow with 6 or 7 medals and giant gold buttons, whose daughter I would no doubt like to meet. "A baseball, sir, you know, like a bowling ball? Yeah, a toy?" "Jack," screamed Kelly, yards and yards behind me. The officer looked at me without comprehending. It wasn't a friendly "I'd like you to meet my daughter" look, neither. "It's just a toy for a game," I called, smiling. "For a favor, toss the ball back, won't you?" "Jack Barginnis, are you deserting?" screamed Kelly. "Jack, come back." I ignored Kelly. I thought I'd let him sweat a little. The lunar officer lifted a brass speaking trumpet from his saddle. He held it to his mouth. "This toy is yours, no?" Those funny lunar folks, as you know, pronounce just about every second or third word with a D or a J or an E sound on account of so many of them having noses like Cortez but nostrils like Montemuna. The D or the J depended on whether or not those fluted nostrils were inhaling or exhaling, and the E sounds when one of the two nostrils is closed. Is how Dr. Judah Payne explained it to us, anyhow. The lunar officer put the little end of the trumpet to his ear and pointed the bell of it at me to listen good. "Right," I smiled, glad that everything was turning out. "Yes, sirree, it's ours, all right. Do me a favor," I began to ask, but was interrupted by my brother. "Jack, come back. I'm sorry. What will Mama say if I have to shoot you down?" The trumpet rose again. "So you make the game in this fort, no? You maybe think this is game, no?" I didn't say anything, feeling somewhat chastened. The officer smiled at me over his trumpet, and his trunk put it up to his mouth again. "Hey, Balloony, you and your balloon and your fort games have insulted me country, me Republic of the Moon," said the trumpet. I couldn't reply to that neither. My brother was saying something, but I didn't hear. "Ah, Yankee Doodle," said the trumpet in a different tone. I know, Derry Vell, that you are just a peon of President Doak. Eh? Maybe I give you back this toy and you pray with me that the Holy Dirgin forgive you for your trespasses. And then I was amazed to see the officer kneel. He put his beautiful white pantaloons right in the dirt. He took off his pretty Roman helmet and lowered his proud face and prayed. And all the horse guards behind him did the same. Once I figured out that he wasn't asking me to feed gin to deer, that he was talking about the Holy Virgin, which took a while seeing that as I hadn't met a virgin nor a church in a long, long time, having spent my Sundays whoring in Baltimore, for it was the only way I could educate myself, reading anything but the almanac and the Bible was the worst of sin and whoring in my country, county, but it charmed, rallied, and enriched the tarts and hussies when I read Napoleon and his marshals to them. I thought his offer over. It was most troublesome. It wouldn't be neighborly to refuse, and I did want that baseball back, but after a moment's furious soul-spinning thought, I sadly found that I could not do it for three reasons. First, if Protestants could pray with Catholics, and technically I was the former, then it didn't seem at all moral to kill one another, claiming the awful deity himself was wearing our shako. Even more confusing was that there were lots of Catholics in my own army. This was more troublesome than killing savages. Second, I was a little bit afraid to pray because of the real bad sin I'd done back at Camp Greenhorn, letting a fellow drown, more or less helping him to drown, more or less holding his head underwater. Even if the awful deity himself would forgive me, I didn't want him to. I didn't deserve it. I didn't want to believe in an awful deity who would let me off the hook. Which brought up the third point. Lately, my awe of the deity had become a bit lax and even doubtful. So, I just stood there, like a fool, with a fool's tears in my eyes, watching my enemy pray. "Jack, get your arse back here in a fort, or we will shoot you down," screamed Kelly. "Give me your worst Voltabolt," I thought. The officer opened his eyes, crossed himself, and stood up. His men did the same. All of them stared at me. The officer grinned, a great big grin that gave me a sinking feeling. He stared at me for a while, then set his great Roman cavalry helmet over his head. He lifted the speaking trumpet. "On me honor, I will ask it of the general himself if it will please him to permit myself to personally give back this toy." "Much obliged, I'm sure," I croaked weakly, but at the departing Lunars, hoping for the best. The officer whirled his brown steed and galloped toward Fort Paredes, holding our baseball in his hand and singing out some terrible-sounding words, his horsemen following him in a churning line. I edged back to Fort Slowpoke. I began to run. Mesquite scratched my legs. Going over the ditch, I slipped and fell in a ways, scratching my leg painfully. When I finally climbed up the slope to the bastion, I saw Kelly with his sword out, pointing my way, and the two sentries aiming their muskets at me. "Honest or just bluffing?" I wondered, eyeing my brother. "Relax, Kelly. The Major gave us our liberty," I told him, trudging up quickly with a backward glance aplenty. "No fraternization with the NME," he chimed, looking at me with relief disguised as anger. Was he relieved more that I returned, or that he didn't have to shoot me down? He rubbed his hand over his eyes. Trotting along the bastion, I called to the waiting crawdads and hawks. "We're getting our baseball back, I think. I'll watch and tell you." Kelly grabbed my neck and yanked me back. "Just what were you doing? What did you tell that feller, Jack? You think all this is a game, boy?" "We traded recipes," I told him, squirming. Now I was dawdling, to be honest. I wanted to stay on top of the wall and see what them pesky Lunars were going to do. Far away, I saw the sun glint on a brass trumpet and heard that officer call out, "Here it comes!" "Well, ain't that nice," I thought, as Kelly dropped me. "Here it comes," I shouted, stepping down into the fort. But getting a mouthful of gun platform number 2 sand because Kelly tripped me. "Get in the fort and stay put." "Do they dare?" said Lieutenant Griswold, peering with a spyglass. "Sir," he called, "they're loading." "Cease your drill. Quiet all around. Sentries, take cover," shouted Captain Loud, drawing his sword and pointing his commands. "Gun commanders, prepare your electrics. Sergeants, place the fuse. Corporal, fix the cap." The bad luck charm swung on Sergeant Weigert's neck as he bent over the thick copper coils of the massive rod and pulled back the spring-loaded copper brush of the fuse. "You don't got to be our lightning rod," I mumbled, reaching over and yanking the cord of the charm. It broke off. I threw it on the ground. Weigert looked at me, relieved and thankful. I disobeyed orders and stayed on the platform to spy through the embrasure. I watched with the other gunners crouched at the four big cannons' embrasure. Behind me, I heard the bugler playing, "Fall in." "Here it comes," shouted the gunners all around. A puff of smoke drifted from the fortified line of guns across the sea. Another and another and another puff lifted up lazily. The dark points rose up and arced over us. As the noise of the firing reached us, a dull hammer-on anvil clanking. Suddenly, with a rush of air, the first shot crashed 50 yards short of the fort. The second one thumped and kicked up sand low on the outside slope of our wall, burying itself. I flinched, but saw another little black dot slowly falling down over the sea. As the dot grew frightfully larger and closer, Sarah yelled, "It's a lunar humdinger!" And then there was a horrible rush of air and a roaring blast cut off by a thump. I stood up again and saw the 12-pound shot spinning in the sand, rolling gently. It rolled gently down the slope and came to a stop in the yard against the peg of one of the tents. And Weigert lay sprawled and bloody, his head torn from his shoulders. An iron rain fell fast on Fort Texas. Okay, thank you for listening. Now, if I remember my research just correctly, from 20-some years ago, that's indeed what happened. A poor soldier named Weigert was decapitated in the initial shots from Mexico. And as you heard in my reading, I did not really attempt the vernacular. There's Irish accent and Mexican accents. Try to pass that over. And the narrator makes reference to voltas. Well, early form of battery, it's called a pile, or also volta's pile. That's the reference to their electric weaponry. Thank you so much for listening. Again, it's available on Kindle for 99 cents. Thanks.